June 7th, 2025. Welcome to This Week in Waukesha, the podcast series from WAUK Radio and Civic Media. I'm Don Brown. I'm your host, and I'm coming to you from the office of former Alderman Don Paul Brown. I'll get it. In downtown Waukesha at the Work Hub Studios, home of Wisco Mary. I am joined by my partner in crime, the exceptional producer, Max Martinson, who is at the WAUK Studios on Victory Avenue in Radio Park. And joining Max is my first podcast host today, and that is former U.S. attorney and host of Amicus, a law review, James Santel, fresh off of another great production. Jim, how are you this morning?
John, I'm doing well, especially well now that I'm talking to you once again. It has been much too long, and delighted, honored to join you to talk about these serious issues and the ways in which we think about America these days.
Right back at you, Jimmy. And before we jump in, I just wanted to give a quick shout out to Don Radomski and the Waukesha North varsity baseball team for winning the WIAA regional championship this week. Congrats, Coach Radomski, and go North Stars. And in this first week of June, for me, it's always a favorite time, a special time. It's school's coming to an end. Summer's finally fighting its way through a bitter Wisconsin spring, and the warm sunshine and green grass gives way to beer gardens, street festivals, barbecues, baseball and softball games, or as I like to call rounders, and the celebration of youth and life at its fullest. And but it's also the week we commemorate D-Day, and we continue to mourn. We reflect on the anniversary of the assassination of Robert F. Kennedy Sr. It kills me to say that we have to add senior now for clarification. And while we celebrate D-Day as the beginning of the ultimate triumph over global fascism, we also reflect and even shed a few tears over so many who sacrificed their lives in that effort. And while we continue to mourn the loss of Bobby Kennedy and what could have been, we also remember, even celebrate, how close we were to a more inclusive, forward-thinking, and yes, prosperous America, as many of us believe. But today we live in a world where a large enough percentage of Americans, maybe not the majority, but a sizable minority for sure, idolize Donald Trump and MAGA and this move to the far right, even fascist regime, fueled by hatred, prejudice, and fear. And today's discussion is about that, is how so many Americans can accept both realities without them being in conflict. And what I'm seeing is today's regime is a betrayal of the enormous sacrifices made by the greatest generation. And Jim, here's where you take over. What are your thoughts on this? I'm sure you parallel my thinking in many ways.
I absolutely do. And it's not just because I like you and we have enjoyed each other's views professionally in the past. It really is true, Don, that we live in not just a split screen society and a split screen culture and nation, but even on an individual basis, you have to ask the question you're asking so well in this conversation, which is, on the one hand, we have, I'd like to think, all Americans who at some point have got to recognize things like D-Day, these dramatic, perhaps the greatest single event in terms of restoring order to the world that has ever happened in I will say, certainly American history and perhaps beyond that as well.
Right.
That notion of not only the importance of rule of law and of justice, but also the importance of fighting for it and having integrity and transparency and doing all those things that all of those soldiers, not only ours, but plainly other allied forces, all the people who gave up their lives that day, and what they fought for, which was, again, coming back, those who did return from the war, to a world where we were on that path, admittedly, right? An uncertain path, but a path, not only in the wake of President Truman and Eisenhower, but down that road where, again, entering ultimately into the 60s, where we were eventually seeing a better, not perfect, no, by no means perfect, but a better movement toward greater civil rights and a greater understanding of who we are, and reconciling that with what we have today, which is going in just the opposite direction. And I'd like to say, Don, you and I agree on this. This is not a political perspective, partisan perspective. When you look at some of the things, Republicans, Democrats, those in between, have got to be able to look at this and say that what is happening here is a basic rescission of the fundamental ways in which we do government, the key ways in which our nation has operated. We're not talking here about policy. We're not talking here about whether or not the Clean Air Act should be amended or how agriculture policy or education policy should be put in place. What we are doing is we're defending the process that permits us to engage in that conversation. Mm-hmm. And that's what's in jeopardy. When you have an executive branch that is saying no to judges, is running roughshod over the individual rights and liberties of people in America, is doing all these things that frankly, again, all of the was it 1.3 million soldiers in American history have died for. We're going back in that opposite direction. If you see both of those, they simply, as you've indicated, Don, so well, they're not reconcilable. They simply are not.
Well said. Not reconcilable.
The question is, how do we come back to a time when we can have those reasonable disputes and those disagreements without being violent to the basic structures that support them?
Yeah. You know, I remember Arthur Schlesinger had written about it in a foreword about a book dedicated to Robert F. Kennedy on the 25th anniversary of his death. And he'd talked about American history being in, especially political history, having different regimes of, public interest versus private interest. So we know the 30s, the New Deal is all about restoring the public interest and the New Deal and all these bold programs that just really was a shot in the arm for a lot of consumer confidence and for people's putting people back to work. I mean, so many things. I hate to hear this argument when they say, the New Deal didn't get us out of the Depression. The war did, but what the New Deal did is it created a whole generation of teachers, managers, small business owners, park rangers, people living very meaningful lives and doing great things for the country. And that led towards, the GI Bill. And then you go into the 50s and it's a private interest era, and we reel some of that in. Maybe there was a little too much spending, or maybe there wasn't careful management. It's almost each decade or every 20 years. And really, like I said, this, what do we define this era as? And we went from that private interest era of the younger Bush administration, and then there was Obama, was that public interest era, and now it seems like an era of craziness or a cult of personality. Years in the making, too.
It is. And to the first point in your great articulation there, we've also got to return to, and again, I still believe that most Americans can do this. You can believe two things at once, right? That's also the reason why our soldiers have died, our veterans have served, and frankly, public servants who are not in those wars are also serving. It is possible for me to believe both that the New Deal and economic principles advance the interests of this country, as did the war that had some plainly economic impacts, also purging us on this planet of an incredibly evil plan for the future of humanity, that I can believe all those things at once, right? And even when I think, as you're going through history, about, the great society that Lyndon Johnson advanced, and again, part of the very history that you're just describing here, I can believe at the same time that the advances of the Civil Rights Act, the Voting Rights Act, the Fair Housing Act, the things in the 1960s did in fact move things closer toward a better society. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, in that very decade, we were suffering some horrific violence, including the history-changing assassination of RFK. Senior again, right? Yeah. Martin Luther King, all those kinds of things, the college unrest that happened in this nation. And the history of our nation, as you just indicated, has been, you can call them ebbs and flows, you can call them ups and downs, valleys and hills. But the point of, I think, what you and I agree on is this notion that we always need to be committed to that ultimate goal, recognizing there will be setbacks, when we have an administration like this that is not committed to something future looking and that ultimately is going in that destructive road, how do we fit that into the overall American history? That's the challenge. That's what we're talking about today.
Right.
Some ideas about that, but that's the reason why this is such a difficult history. It'll be interesting to see if our grandchildren, our great grandchildren, how they describe this time right now when they ask you, Grandpa, what happened in 2016 and 2020 and 2024 and 2028? Describe for me the climate of America and put that in some history that helps me make sense of the 60s and the 50s and the 40s and the 30s of that then will be a right. long prior century.
Yeah. And I guess it's like what Cicero once said, not to know what happened before you were born is to be forever a child. But yet there were people that lived through World War One, and I think societally swore worldwide, this can never happen again.
Right.
And yet 30 years later it did. And with a lot of the same kind of characters and a lot of the same playbooks as what contributed to the Third Reich and the rise of Hitler and fascism and, you know, Mussolini and Japan, everywhere else. Even extremism in Russia. And so it's like we're not even learning from the mistakes from 20 or 30 years earlier.
Right, right. And you wonder if in part, I think it's attributed to Mark Twain. Many others have said it, that history doesn't repeat itself. It rhymes. It certainly does, right?
Yeah.
And maybe one of the solutions, you know, as we bemoan where we are right now, and we are in this area. I've said it multiple times on the broadcasts of Civic Media, and I believe on a prior podcast of yours, Don, that we are in a crisis of the constitutional nature. There's no doubt about that. We've got members of our administration saying no to judges, simply saying we're not going to follow what you say.
Right.
And we go back in other times, FDR was very upset with what the Supreme Court was telling him about, right? And came through that. But he still acknowledged fundamental non-authoritarian processes that I felt. Frankly, in a recent opinion coming out of the Fourth Circuit, one of the great judges of our time noted that Dwight David Eisenhower was not a fan, if you will, and a great president, of the notion that separate is inherently unequal. And when Brown versus Board of Education 2 came out and said, you got to do this with all deliberate speed, what did that president do, that great president? He said, you know what? That's my obligation. And yes, I'm going to enforce what the law is in this country.
Yeah.
And that's what we're missing today. Republicans and Democrats alike, regardless of who your president is, saying that I may not agree with this result. I may want to move the country in a different direction, but I don't have the capacity to set myself up as the authoritarian who simply says I can do whatever I want, hearkening back then to the Mussolinis and the others of that time. That's the difference in what we have today from what we have seen in history.
Yeah, that's, I mean, very eloquently expressed.
If I could go further, I do not mean to stand on my soapbox too much longer, you asked at the outset, you know, what do we do about this? And this sounds, you're an academician, you're a teacher, you both in government and with family, and you spent all your life instructing in public service and helping people understand things. This very podcast, one example of that. It may sound Pollyannish and it may sound way too easy. And people will say, oh, Jim, that's not going to solve this problem, or people are so angry and so virulent about their views. And it's not going to happen overnight. But I do believe that one of the central issues is education.
Yes.
And it is, as you hinted before, pulling out our history books once again, and not that that's not going on in the high schools of your children and others, but out there.
The degrees to which it's going on, though, is
exactly, very right? concerned right? about. and spending some time, not just in colleges, but even in non-academic settings, going to seminars that talk about what was going on in the 1920s in this country.
Yeah.
How do we get into the First World War? What happened in the 1950s, the post-war period? Let's talk about the 1960s, because although I remember that and you do, I recognize every single day of my life that there is an entire series of generations that for them, it's truly history in the same way that I might look at FDR, going back and saying, here's what happened. And overlaying that with what we also talk about on this broadcast and your good podcast,
right.
A fundamental sense of how things work, how government works. I am consistently stunned, without throwing everybody under the bus, but from people who are well-meaning will ask me questions that belie a fundamental misunderstanding about who does what in America. Your local school board is not responsible for Southwest border immigration policy, right?
Yes.
Your county board is not responsible for a federal budget having to do with the bankruptcy courts. Those are, again, maybe that's too wonky. Maybe that's too much in the weeds.
No, but I know what you're getting at, yeah.
But we need to go back to that. And I wonder out loud if that may be a base, not the glide plane to it, but a base for some commonality that can ramp down the virulence and also get us back to that spot where we can disagree still, but not do it in this authoritarian manner.
Yes. I mean, I was pleased to learn that my ninth grade daughter was reading, they were reading Animal Farm in her AP English class. So I was very encouraged by that. Mm-hmm. But I also know I had two other children that went through the same high school, and they were, both good, one was an honor student, one also had really good grades, good enough to get into good colleges. And nothing on them, but if I were to ask them which Roosevelt presided over World War II, I don't think they could give me a definitive answer. And that's what's disconcerting to me. And I think too, is that history, there's so many opportunities for interpretation and reinterpretation. And I forget who it was. I think it might have been Faulkner that said that the past isn't over. It hasn't even passed. And that there is just so much more to learn. And so, I'm learning things about and stuff that's available even on television streams. I know I should read this, but a recent documentary on the World Wars, Hitler was in a very, was very, very close to conquering the whole world.
Mm-hmm.
And except for a few tactical moves and some good luck on the side of the American, we were able to overcome that. But like one great example is, during D-Day, there was the armed force, the Allies, had Hitler convinced that the invasion was going to take place on a coastal city closer to Italy, or it might have even been in Italy. And so Hitler had all his ducks, and that, like, he had a huge military presence there in anticipation of it. But then he moved, I think it was like 300 miles down the road to Normandy for the real D-Day. And so, but anyway, in the 2 minutes we have, what else, what advice do you have for how we can move forward in our homes and in our workplaces and our friends groups?
Right. I embrace entirely what you just said, not only about learning more from whatever sorts. It doesn't have to be books, it doesn't have to be magazines, great stuff out there, inscribed on the side of the National Archives building. You've been there, your family's been there, where the Constitution is located, the Declaration of Independence, all these other documents. It says past is prologue. Past is prologue, exactly what you just said. And the recommendation, once again, it doesn't have to be that you need to enroll in a world history course or an American history course, although that's always great, but continuing education and committed to doing that. And then the other part of it is, as you just did, Don, saying, you know what? I just read this wonderful 40-page article that enlightened me about something that I did not know. Let me share some perspectives with you over coffee as we get together for dinner. And let me talk with you, for example, about what the circumstances in 1968 were like when RFK was assassinated. What might have been? Let's have that engaging, interesting conversation about paths of history that did not happen, paths of history that could happen as a way of all enlightening us and getting our intellectual capacities at the highest level possible. Maybe that's a way forward.
And I think that's great. It's a great lead in, Jim. Thank you for that, for my second podcast, where a Waukesha longtime resident is going to share some unique World War II history involving an uncle that was a prisoner of war, as well as her reflections about D-Day as having a father in the military in World War II, and also being old enough to remember the RFK assassination and other things. So Jim Santel, Amicus Alarvi, thanks so much for your gift of time and sharing your expertise. And I do look forward to meeting you soon for lunch and a future podcast on the very same or similar topic. So Thank you again.
Always a pleasure. Yeah. Honored to be with you and with all your listeners. Take care.
You too, Jim. And thank you, Max. And thanks everybody for listening. Please remember, safety is everyone's responsibility. Good mental health is everybody's right. Go Ramila Mahagav Galer, and see ya!